I hear from people from Quebec. And now with the live stream, I have a guy who calls me from Bermuda, a couple of people from Ohio, guy in Tennessee. There's a couple of people in Ireland who stay up all night long to listen to the show. So I think that it's accomplished what it should have.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we put the spotlight on one of our own. Well, a fixture at WAMC is marking her 40th anniversary this year, coming to listeners every Saturday night. A special celebration is planned for Wanda Fisher on October 8th. My colleague Lucas Willard sat down with Wanda. At this point, I'll hand it off to him.
If you've tuned into WAMC on Saturday nights any time over the past 4 decades, you've heard something like this.
This is the Hudson River Sampler. You're tuned to 90.3 on your FM dial, WAMC in Albany. And we're going to listen now. 2 people have called to request this song, so I think we ought to play it. This is Gordon Bach, Ann Muir, and Ed Trickett.
For 40 years, Wanda Fisher has hosted the Hudson River Sampler on WAMC. The show that features a weekly selection of folk music has been a staple of WAMC's Saturday night programming through much of the station's modern history. On Saturday, October 8th, an anniversary celebration will be held at the Linda in Albany, featuring national and local folk music acts, including Ann Hills, Reggie Harris, Christine Lavin, Sawyer Fredericks, John Kirk, and Trish Miller. Fisher grew up with a passion for the music, but in 1982 was considering a move back to Massachusetts when she got a call from WAMC.
And they called me up and they said that they had a space on Saturday night right after Prairie Home Companion. And would I like to have that? Because I was working during the week. I had another job. And I said, okay. And they said, well, we're going to start on September 18th, 1982. Do you think you can pull it together between now and then? And we had 32 record albums in the record library.
And, at WAMC.
At WAMC. And so every week I had to bring most of my stuff from home because we didn't have them. And we had to get the word out to people, the services that had folk records, that we needed them. And I got the word out pretty quickly and got people from places like Folk Legacy Records down in Sharon, Connecticut, who had a great library of mostly traditional stuff, and out to Flying Fish and Rounder. And that's when we started getting records, record albums. We didn't get our first CD until 1989, and it was from Christine Lavin, who was going to be part of the celebration here on October 8th.
So if you remember back in bringing your own records in, what were the artists that you played from your own collection? And how long did it take you to start expanding the catalog on air?
Well, I think I played a lot of Gordon Bach, Gordon Lightfoot, Peter, Paul, and Mary. Let me see, who else? Probably Joan Baez and Judy Collins. I have quite a bit of vinyl records still in my house, and I brought in things like Archie Fisher, and he's no relation. He doesn't have a C in his name. And the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem and people like that. And then after the first few shows, trying to mix it up a little bit. That was a challenge, because even though I have a lot of albums at home, you know, they're heavy to carry in. So I had to try to figure out how to minimize what I was carrying in and then mix it with what the station had. And we were not here. We were not in this studio here. We were sharing space with WMHT when they were still in Rotterdam. So we had just a little bit of space and 2 turntables, and the board operator was around the corner. So it was not the best. It certainly wasn't the worst, because I worked at a small station before that was far worse than that setup. The setup was far worse. So I just said, okay, well, we're just going to punt and do what we can.
When you look at the artists that you played back then and the artists that you play in your show today, 40 years later, do you see how your musical taste changed? Do you think that you went from thinking you knew a lot about folk music into knowing, I don't know, anything about folk music, and now you are an encyclopedia of folk music?
Well, I don't know if I'm an encyclopedia of folk music, because I still try to keep up with all the new artists, and I have to preview a lot of new CDs that come in. And I go to a couple of folk conferences a year. I go to the National Folk Alliance International Conference, and then I go to the Northeast Regional Folk Alliance Conference that's coming up in November. And I try to hear as many new people in concert as I can. I still retain quite a bit of knowledge from way back when, because I grew up with this kind of music. My father was friends with the Carter family, the famous Carter family, Joe, June, and Jeanette. And June Carter's name might sound familiar because she was married to Johnny Cash. And my father went to school with them in southwestern Virginia. So when I was born, that's the kind of music that our family was surrounded with, you know, right around the time that, so I was born in 1948. So when I was a little child, this is the music that was in my house. So I would say that I know a lot more about the earlier folk music than the newer stuff. I try to keep up with the new stuff, and people do send me their music, the new music. It's harder to do that. And what I try to do on my show, I try to mix the old, the middle stuff from like the 60s and 70s with the new material. So sometimes I'm listening to a new CD that came in, and mostly I listen a lot in my car, and I'll say, oh, I know exactly what goes with that. This Ian and Sylvia song, this Gordon Bach song, or this song by John Gorka. And that's how I decide what I'm going to play.
Besides growing up with the music, why have you continued down this path? What is it you like about folk music that you want to keep sharing with people?
Well, I was a folk musician for a long time. In the 60s in Boston, I did perform at a number of the coffee houses. I never made it big enough to get into the big one, which was Club 47, now Club Passim. But I did go around and sing at a bunch of places. And I still do some singing, mostly singing. I don't play the guitar very well anymore. And I met my husband at a coffee house in Boston, and he was the talent manager at the Boston College coffee house, and I auditioned for him. But it's just because it's a passion, and it's something that I love, and it reminds me so much of my dad, who died in 1987. That's one thing. But I also feel a bond with the listeners. And every Saturday night, I get phone calls from some of the same people that call every week. I know their voices. I know what they're going to ask for most of the time.
Because it's a live show.
It's a live show.
Right.
I really like doing my show live. I don't like pre-recording. I do have to pre-record sometimes if I have to go out of town. And I like having the phone calls because people will say to me, well, you know, in about 10 years ago, you played this song and it had the following line in it. And I have to go,
You have to think back to the encyclopedia.
Okay, you know, name that tune. And if I can't remember it, I'm a member of a folk DJ listserv, and I will put that out on the listserv, and somebody inevitably knows what it is.
During the same show, will you get an answer?
No, because I don't really have anybody to run a computer for me, so I have to. And sometimes I'm running down the hallway to get the request, and then I think, okay, this request goes with what? Because I may have been planning to play something else. So somebody says, okay, I want to hear a Stan Rogers song. And, okay, all right. So what goes with this? And Stan Rogers was a giant in the folk music world. He died in 1985 trying to rescue people from a plane fire in Cincinnati. He was young. He was in his late 20s. His brother, Garnet, sort of took over the mantle for him, and Garnett is an incredible musician in his own right. So somebody will call and say, could you play Garnett Rogers this week? And so I run down the hall and I get Garnett Rogers. You know, so, and then I think, okay, what goes with that song? So then you have to think about what you have with the new music that you've just gotten in that week, what will go with that song? So it's different, but I really enjoy it, and I like the listeners calling in.
Is it challenging sticking with one genre?
No, because there's so much music out there that you can draw from, and you can take some of the old songs like the Carter Family stuff from way back, and a little bit of bluegrass, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, some blues, and work it all in.
Let's see, we've got 7 minutes after nine. We are still taking requests if you're interested in calling. Area code 518-465-5233. We are not taking requests for Stairway to Heaven, for Papa Don't Preach, for anything by Bon Jovi. We are not that kind of a station on Saturday evenings, and we have been getting...
Do you ever hear from new listeners? I know you've been on the air for 40 years, but do you ever hear from somebody who they're tuning in for the first time?
Yeah, I do, and the other thing is that I've had a couple of calls that kind of go like this. My mom used to make me listen to your show when I was a kid, and now I listen on my own. I really like it, you know, so... some of the people are younger, and I've had a couple of emails recently from people who have just discovered the show.
How do you think folk music has changed over 40 years? Obviously, the word folk music means a lot.
It does.
It's a simple word that means a lot of things. But as far as trends in folk music have gone, what are you observing right now in the world of folk music in 2022?
It's a lot more singer-songwriters. There's a lot less traditional music being done. There are a few younger people doing traditional music. There's a young woman named Nora Brown who just put out a traditional album. And there's some of the work that Rhiannon Giddens is doing incorporates traditional music. But I'm seeing a lot more singer-songwriters. I'm seeing a lot less political music, although some political music is being dropped now. I'm also seeing a lot more instrumentation in the music, more backup musicians than there were before. Back in the 60s, everything was very sparse. There was a lot more political music in the 60s. Phil Oakes's music, which was very political, is making a resurgence. People are picking up Phil Oakes's music and saying, hey, wait a minute, this stuff is still applicable these days when you think about the political sphere now. The music isn't as sparse as it used to be. It's not Joan Baez with a guitar. It's not Peter, Paul, and Mary with two guitars and a bass player. It's a lot more instrumentation backup. That's what I'm seeing.
Are there any contemporary artists that you really enjoy?
There are a few that I really like. There's a guy named Jake Blunt who just put out a new album. There are several Canadians that I love. James Keelahan is one. He's from Canada. Garnett Rogers, again, he's from Canada. The Canadians are putting out some great, great music. They have a group of people up there. James Keelahan, he's kind of an interesting guy because he takes a lot of historical stories and writes songs about them. And I'm trying to just think off the top of my head. There's Jim and Susie Malcolm in the traditional realm. They're from Scotland, and Archie Fisher from Scotland. So there are some very interesting people. They're kind of like combinations of singer-songwriters and traditional. Archie Fisher and Jim and Susie Malcolm go in that realm. David Roth, who writes a lot of political songs, and so there's quite a few. Anne Hills, who is coming to the October 8th performance, she is perhaps one of the most requested performers on the show. She writes everything, and She writes historical things, political things, and she just has the most amazing voice. And the other person that I have to mention is John McCutcheon. John McCutcheon started out as basically a traditional hammer dulcimer player. And now John can write anything about any topic. He can sing anything. He can play any instrument you put in his hands. He can do, he can play the mandolin, the fiddle, the piano, hammer dulcimer, the Appalachian dulcimer. And he is just possibly the nicest person you'll ever meet.
So let's talk about the upcoming anniversary celebration that's on October 8th at the Linda in Albany. Going into planning this, what's the event that you want to see?
Well, I wanted people to get an idea of some of the musicians I play on my show. So I asked who was available, first of all, and Ann Hills, Reggie Harris, Christine Lavin, and John Kirk. And John Kirk is somebody whose voice I absolutely love. And I also asked Sawyer Fredericks to do a couple of songs because he and I have gotten along for a really long time. And he was on my show. And when he was here, my Facebook page for the show blew up. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so many people who were making comments on Facebook page. And Reggie Harris has done incredible things with the civil rights movement. And Ann Hills, again, is the most requested. Christine sent me my first CD in 1989, Christine Lavin. And John Kirk, I'll tell you just a quick story about John Kirk. My daughter was about 12 years old, and she's almost 44. We were at the Old Songs Festival, and she heard John Kirk sing. She said to me, "That's the guy I want to sing at my wedding." And I said, "Oh, okay, you know. That's great." So when she got her engagement ring, she called me on the phone and she said, "Call John Kirk." And he did sing at her wedding.
Wow.
So that's, you know, so I wanted kind of a representative of people to be there because they're only going to do a few songs. And I've also gotten some messages from people who can't be there to play that are on video that we will show that night. And I don't really want to say exactly who they are.
I won't ruin the surprise.
No, those are some surprises. And there's somebody else who's sitting right across from you who might actually sing a couple of songs that night, but we don't know that yet.
Okay.
We don't know exactly yet. But Sawyer's going to do a couple of songs to open the show, and then we're going to run through the rest of it.
Have you heard from the listeners of your program who are excited to come, or is there anything that the listeners have requested that you wanted to make sure was included in the show?
No, the people who have told me that they're coming have said that they trust me to have picked people that they will like. And the show will be broadcast live also in the time slot that my show would be in.
Okay. So and if people can't make it in person, they can listen on the radio.
Right. Or if the show gets sold out, which I understand it's fairly close to being. So you'll still be able to listen online.
So you've been doing your program for 40 years
right.
at WAMC, and you continue. This anniversary celebration is not a finale or anything. You're going to keep producing the show.
Absolutely. And it's kind of interesting because when we started the show, my son was 2 years old. My daughter was not quite four. I had to hire babysitters a lot when the show began because my husband was a medical resident and he wasn't around as much as he would have liked to have been. And I've got a number of crazy stories about having to bring the kids to the station. And I had this little black and white TV that was about this big and I would stick it in a corner and have them watch TV sometimes if I couldn't find a babysitter. But I have to give a shout out to my husband and kids because they gave up a lot of Saturday nights without me home. And it's not easy. I did record things when my daughter had a big dance recital or something like that. I would record my show. So much easier to do it on a computer now rather than those big reel-to-reel things, because you would get halfway through the reel-to-reel program and the tape would come twisted and you'd have to go back and start it all over again. You know, so technology has been a friend.
So looking back over the last four decades, is there any particular moment or is there something about the show that you are particularly proud of?
Well, I'm proud of the fact that during the pandemic, I did the show live throughout the whole time. That's one thing. Another thing is that I really feel that the show has accomplished what it should accomplish, and that is to introduce people to new music plus keep the older stuff alive. And some people call and say, you know, I've never heard that stuff before, or I thought I knew everything that John Prine had ever recorded, and then you played this. So that's a particularly satisfying thing. The other thing is I have one quick anecdote to tell you. I got a call from a guy a long time ago, and he said, "Hi, it's Christopher Reeve over here in Williamstown." And I said, wait, hold it. "You mean Christopher Reeve, the actor?" And he said, "Right. I just want to ask you about a song you just played."
He just brushed it right
off. And he said, "A song you just played. It was a folky version of Singing in the Rain." And I happened to know the person whose song it was. And he said, "I'd like to find out how I can get that." And so I told him, I read the person's address off the back of the album jacket. And he said, "Thank you very much. I really like your program when I can listen." And that was it. So the next day I called the person who lives in Amherst and I said, "Take a copy," because it was a vinyl recording, "take a copy of that down to the Williamstown Theater Festival and bring it to Christopher Reeve," which she did. And that was, of course, before he had his accident, et cetera. And so that was kind of neat that I was able to have them make connections like that.
Absolutely.
So it was, well, that was fun. But that was a long time ago. And we didn't have all these stations, too. You know, we just had the one mothership station back then. And when we started branching out with other stations, we were starting to hear from people. I hear from people from Quebec. And now with the live stream, I have a guy who calls me from Bermuda, a couple of people from Ohio, guy in Tennessee. There's a couple of people in Ireland who stay up all night long to listen to the show. So I think that it's accomplished what it should have.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Congratulations to Wanda Fisher, and thanks to Lucas Willard for that great interview. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.